This is Philosophy Bites with me, Nigel Warburton.
And me, David Edmonds.
Philosophy Bites is unfunded. Please help us keep it going by subscribing or donating at www.philosophybites.com, or you can become a patron at Patreon.
Take the sound of this podcast. What does it sound like to you? A podcast is not just a series of sound waves. It has a subjective impact. That is, there is something it is like for you to hear the podcast. It may sound different to how somebody else hears it. But how can we make sense of this subjectivity, of this rich inner life of sounds and tastes and smells? A former Philosophy Bites interviewee, David Chalmers, has called this the hard problem of consciousness. Keith Frankish agrees it's hard, but thinks he may have a solution.
Keith Frankish, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Thank you for inviting me.
The topic we're going to focus on is the hard problem and the illusion of qualia. What is the hard problem?
Well, consciousness, I think everyone agrees, is weird. It's a very important thing. It's perhaps the thing that we're most intimately familiar with. And it seems very, very hard to explain. And the hard problem is precisely explaining it. Somehow, brains produce consciousness. The rich variety of sensory experiences, the experience of seeing a brilliant blue Mediterranean sky, the taste of wine or coffee, the feel of a silk sheet on one's skin, or the pain of stubbing one's toe. Somehow the brain produces these things, and they are very, very important to us. These are what our life is, really, is a succession of these experiences, these sensations. And how does it do it? And that's the hard problem. We know a great deal about how the brain works at the level of the individual cells and the neurons and how they fire and how they communicate with each other. But how does all that add up to this wonderful world of conscious experience that we all have?
So I'm looking at a plane tree with a beautiful green colour leaf, and I can see the rain glistening on the leaves, and that's a particular kind of experience. And the hard problem is explaining how on earth that experience could have been generated in me from a purely physical brain.
Exactly. We know a lot about what is happening in you as you experience the leaf. We can tell quite a detailed story about the light rays hitting your eye, being focused by the lens in your eye onto your retina, about the signal that sends through the optic nerve to your visual cortex, and about the processing that happens there, the various forms of discriminations that are made by the visual system. But how, in the course of that, does the experience itself arise?
And this is sometimes called the problem of qualia, isn't it? This notion that there is a qualitative aspect to our experience.
Yes. Qualia, it's a philosopher's term. The singular is quale. It's a term for the way the experience feels to you. What it's like on the inside, as it were, to see the sky, to see the leaf that you were looking at, to feel a pain. The idea is that these are mental things. This is something that's happening in you. The colour that you experience is something private. We can wonder whether other people see the same colours in the same way. Maybe they don't have quite the same experience. Maybe the feel of the experience is different to them. Maybe green looks more like red to them. We don't know, it seems. And so when philosophers talk about this feature of experiences, they use various technical terms like qualia or the phenomenal properties of the experience, the what it is likeness of the experience. These are all terms that philosophers use. We don't really have an everyday term for it, but they're trying to capture this subjective aspect.
And some people think it's so mysterious, this phenomenon, that we are just incapable of understanding how it could possibly be achieved.
Yes, that's a view that Colin McGinn proposes. He argues that by the very nature of our minds, the ways in which we conceptualize things, the kind of representational powers that our minds have, we just can't grasp the solution to this problem. He thinks there is a solution, and it might even be a very simple one, but it's not one that the human mind is capable of grasping. So that's a very pessimistic view of the problem, and I guess would mean that we should probably stop trying to solve the hard problem.
But you're more optimistic, aren't you?
Well, yes, I am. An optimist just thinks that there's a solution that we can find. And I guess you could divide optimists into two camps. One thinks that we can solve this problem using the resources of existing science, the kind of concepts and theories that modern cognitive science employs. So thinking about the way the brain represents things, the kind of reactions that we have to experience, and this sort of things, perhaps involving self-monitoring abilities within the brain, but not really involving anything radically new. And then a different approach thinks that, yes, we can solve this problem, but we're going to need a revolution in the way we think about the mind. We're going to have to recognize that there exist properties that are not physical in the ordinary sense. And these properties somehow are correlated with activity in the brain, but they are different from that activity. They are some extra features of reality that are not acknowledged by existing science.
As I understand it, you go for the former approach, though, don't you? You think that we can understand the nature of consciousness through the apparatus, the concepts, the methodologies of science. You don't need to go beyond science. You don't need to postulate new sorts of stuff to explain consciousness.
Yes, well, I think it's a good approach to take. At the moment, our understanding of consciousness on anybody's view is at a very early stage, and we haven't really fully developed and explored all the possibilities of explanation within existing frameworks. And so I think it makes sense to continue that project and only if it completely fails, resort to more radical options of positing new features of reality. Maybe we can't see how we can explain it in, say, representational terms, in terms of the information that the brain processes. But maybe that's just a problem of our imagination, and we need to think a bit harder about how information processing theories could explain consciousness.
So if we take seriously the idea that we can give a naturalistic explanation of consciousness, that we can explain consciousness in purely physical terms using science as our basis, what are the options?
Well, one option is to take the common sense view of consciousness at face value. It seems to us that we're having experiences with these exotic properties, qualia, and we can just accept that we are. Qualia really exist. These subjective fields really exist, and we need to explain them in physical terms. Maybe the experience you had of looking at the green leaf and the way it felt to you was just a way of representing the world, of representing the fact that there is a leaf out there that is certain characteristics, that reflects light in a certain way. And maybe that's all there is to it. That's one strategy. And it's a strategy that I used to think would work. But now I'm not so sure about that. I've come to think that qualia really are too mysterious to be explained in physical terms. In that respect, I've come to side more closely with the people who reject physicalism, even though I am a physicalist.
How can you do that? It seems like having your cake and eating it.
That's exactly what it is. Yes, I think qualia are too mysterious to be physical. But I also think the world is physical, and that we are just physical beings. And there's really only one way to reconcile those two claims, and that is to say that qualia don't exist. They're an illusion.
Don't exist and being an illusion aren't exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. In one sense, it's undeniable that I'm having the experience. So I am having an experience of that green leaf still. You can't deny that.
You're certainly having that experience, and that experience has all the importance for you that it seems to have. I'm just denying that that experience should be characterized as one that involves qualia, these mysterious, apparently non-physical properties. I want to say that what that experience involves is being in a state that seems to have these mysterious non-physical properties. And that's very important to it. What makes it so special is precisely that it seems kind of magical and non-physical. But it isn't really magical and non-physical. It just seems to be magical and non-physical. That's why I call it an illusion.
That's quite hard to take in immediately because I can't bring myself to believe that my experience now is an illusion. I could believe that it's an illusion in the sense that somebody could be projecting an image of a green leaf on the window so it seems to be an experience of a leaf that I'm having when it isn't, but that the whole experience is an illusion. I can't see how that could be possibly true.
Well, as far as the external world goes, I'm not claiming that it's an illusion at all. The experience is telling you that there's a leaf there, and there indeed is a leaf there. It's not that you're under any kind of illusion about the nature of the external world. What I'm suggesting is you're under an illusion about the nature of the internal world, about what's involved in your having that experience. When we start to reflect on what's involved in seeing the leaf, we start to move the focus from the leaf onto our experience of the leaf and how this seems to us, and then we start to introduce these terms like qualia and phenomenal properties and so on. And now I think we're already entering the realm of something theoretical. In ordinary life, we don't say, look at the wonderful experience, the wonderful qualia caused by the sunset. We just say, look at the sunset. It's when we start to internalize, to focus on how the experience seems subjectively, that we start to get into these puzzles, I think. And then I think, since we're already in this theoretical realm, I don't think it's too big a claim to say, instead of talking about qualia, we should talk about the illusion of qualia.
So would it be fair to put it this way, that the concept of qualia actually begs the question about how consciousness occurs, because it assumes that it's a real thing and assumes that it's got qualities which aren't easily explicable in terms of the physical, in terms of the brain?
Yes, exactly. That's precisely how I would put it. I don't think that consciousness is an illusion. Consciousness is what we're all familiar with. That's not an illusion. The question is what's involved in having those experiences, those sensations. And I think it does, as you say, beg the question to say that it involves having states with qualia.
So if you go down that route, what is the story that you can tell which accounts for my experience, my illusion of experiencing the qualitative aspects of this leaf in front of me, or these leaves in front of me?
I think there are two sorts of stories we can tell. One is about your getting information about the leaf. This is a kind of perceptual story, okay? So we talk about your receiving stimuli, visual stimuli from the leaf, and these being processed by the brain in a way that involves constructing representations of external reality, which can then be used to guide your behaviour. So what you do is you're extracting information about the world and using it in various ways. And one of the things that people often say about consciousness is that all of that could seem to be non-conscious. There doesn't seem to be anything in that that requires consciousness. We could imagine a robot being able to do that quite easily. So on the other side, then, is what do we say about this rich inner life that seems to go along with perception, with gathering information about the world? And maybe we need to tell a separate story about that. And there are separate kinds of neural processes, brain processes that are going on involved in constructing that experience. And maybe what is involved is some sort of internal monitoring of those processes, some kind of introspection of those processes. When we talk about how the experience feels, we're not now reacting to the leaf or whatever it is. We're reacting to neural activity that accompanies perception of the leaf.
Is what you're saying this, roughly, that my experience of the leaf is actually probably best explained in terms of brain activity, not in terms of a particular feel of things? If you start to go down the route of trying to describe the qualitative aspects of it, you're in the grip of the theory of qualia, which comes quite naturally to us because of the way that we're constructed. But actually, all we'll ever be talking about is some state of the brain or process in the brain.
Yes, I think that's a good way of putting it. One thing I would add, though, is that when we think about why we have this illusion, as I call it, of qualia, maybe it's very important that qualia should seem to be inexplicable, mysterious, non-physical, special. And this is something that Nicholas Humphrey has written a lot about. Maybe the function of consciousness is to make us seem special to ourselves, to make us seem to have this kind of magical inner life, which precisely seems non-physical, non-mundane. So not only does this promise to provide an answer to the hard problem, it also promises to explain why the problem seems so hard. It's set up to seem so hard. The hardness is a feature, not a bug.
So it's as if evolution has created a difficult problem for us precisely to make us care about it.
Yes, and to make us care about ourselves. Creating this illusion gives us a new interest in ourselves, in our own existence, and thereby in the existence of others too, who also have this inner specialness.
Does it follow from your approach that a complex enough physical computer or other construction could genuinely have a kind of artificial consciousness?
I think it does. There's nothing in the story, as I would tell it, that depends upon particular properties of the biological brain tissue. I think it's to do with the kinds of activity that is going on in brains, not information processing so much, but the kind of experience-creating activity that's going on in there and the way that it is monitored. And I don't see any reason why similar processes couldn't be performed by non-biological tissue. And in that case, yes, I think artificial consciousness is a possibility. I'm sure that other kinds of consciousness do exist elsewhere in the universe.
Keith Frankish, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
For more Philosophy Bites, go to www.philosophybites.com. You can also find details there of Philosophy Bites books and how to support us.